How about we get cracking, man?
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for those who've been waiting patiently. And what is up, kangaroo chasers? And welcome to another episode of Chasing Kangaroos Live. If you're here in the chat on Facebook right now, chuck some questions at us as we have the conversation. We'll try and answer as much as we can. If you're following along on Chasing Kangaroos after the fact on the podcast, then thanks for joining us. And it's great to have you here. But I'm here after we had a great conversation with Steve Mascord a couple of weeks ago, and I know a lot of you heard it. It was a vintage episode of Chasing Kangaroos, one of my favorites in a long time. But Steve had some really good insights around why he thought the game can't really grow in the UK anymore, why it may have reached its peak. And it was a fascinating conversation. Listen to it if you haven't already. But I thought it would be great timing after the fact to have a chat with my good mate, Rob Ashton from the Bedford Tigers, who is in a non-rugby league heartland area north of London. But things seem to be growing slowly and nicely there, mate. And I think you're doing a very good job. So I thought I'd get you on for a quick chat.
Yeah, mate. Thank you.
Mate, anyone that hasn't listened to us, you've been on the Chasing Kangaroos podcast a few times. But for those who haven't heard you, tell us what you're doing. Tell us where you're from. Tell us what's going on in a nutshell.
Yeah, so Bedford's it's a bit of a rugby town. It's a bit of an anomaly in the UK because normally football's king everywhere. But we've got, I'd say rugby's the biggest sport. We're obviously referring to rugby union because we're in the south of England. But I picked up the game in 2006, 2005 maybe. Yeah, this is my 20th year. So 2005, I accidentally sort of went down and played a game and absolutely loved it. And since then, it's sort of, you know, the sport at the time was in a fairly good place. We had development offices down here that were funded, and it was growing slowly. And then, you know, there was a bit of a transition at the club, and I ended up taking over in 2009. And we just typically ran just, you know, a men's section, as most clubs did at the time. And we sort of just carried that through and grew the men's section from first team to second team. And we sort of, every now and again, somebody, you know, an interested parent would say, oh, can I run a team for my kids? And it's like, well, okay, we'll have one age group, but then it would time itself out and you'd sort of lose those players. And I'd say, like, you know, the RFL then lost a load of central funding from Sport England and the development offices got cut. And I was like, well, I want to keep playing. And these clubs were sort of dying all around me. It wasn't like I was never trying to be some guy wearing a cape trying to save rugby league. I just wanted to play rugby league, right? So I was going to all these clubs and I was going, please don't die. Just stay afloat. Stay afloat and we can sort of have our own little comp in our area. And like credit to all the guys who run those clubs, like the Hemel Stags, who you might have heard of, they were League One a couple of years ago. Then you've got North Hearts Crusaders down the road. Who else we got locally? St Albans, Brentwood Eels, great club, really good sort of junior setup that lays all their foundations. So they're really strong at seniors at the minute because they've got all that coming through. Who else? Eastern Rhinos do a great job and they're out on a limb as well. And then you've got the London clubs who sort of, they're pretty strong. The London Foundation is pretty strong and they do a really good job with the London Junior League. So there's loads of kids playing rugby league in London. And it was just about sort of tying up the teams who were closest to us so that I could keep playing rugby league. That was literally it. And then, you know, I sort of got older and the body starts to hurt a bit more and I start to look at transitioning and do it. You know, what else can I do with this club? How far can I take it? What can I do? And then we hit COVID. Oh, yeah, we're setting up a wheelchair team, right? So this is going to be really exciting. And our first session was set for March or April of 2020. And I didn't know how it was going to go. There was a little bit of interest. There was a few people sort of saying, oh, I'll come down and see what it's about. We had this first session planned. And then COVID hit. Country gets locked down that weekend. So that's it. You know, rugby of any description is just dead in the water. And then we come out of COVID and it's like, well, you can't do any sport indoors because it comes with all these rules and regulations. So I was like, well, let's park the idea of a wheelchair team. It was nice. It was expensive. It was going to be hard work. Let's just push that to one side and we'll just get the men's section up and running. And then there was a bit of interest from, you know, the RFL got some funding for setting up women's stuff. So there was a bit of a push for women's stuff, and I was like, well, I'm going to jump on that bandwagon because I want to take this club. Like, my dream is to work in professional rugby league somewhere, wherever that is, however that is. And I was like, we live so far away from any professional club. It's like, well, let's see how far we can get the Tigers, right? So if I'm modeling myself on all these pro clubs, it's the women's section was where the push was.
Yep.
So we set up a women's section and I didn't know what to expect. And these girls came down and they're absolutely fantastic. Like, the standard was so much higher than I expected. And I was really naive to this. I was really ignorant. I didn't realize how good some of the standard of local rugby union players was, female rugby union players. So we started this team and, you know, they're literally playing rugby league and they're all coming along. They're absolutely loving it. Probably because they're playing rugby after a year out because COVID's killed everything. And then, you know, they start to get a taste for it because they're playing in the sunshine. It's not sideways rain. It's not muddy. It's, you know, and there's the smell of a barbecue on the side of the pitch and everyone can have a cider after the game outside in the sunshine, you know. And that started to take off. And then they start to really develop themselves with the game. And they really start to pick up on the nuances of the game and they start to enjoy the game. And then we start to get some real success with, I think Ireland, well, I don't think, I know, Ireland started up their national program at roughly the same time. And we had a girl from Ireland in our team who was absolutely outstanding. So I was like, let's just see what we can do. So I pushed her up there and she's straight in the national side and she hasn't missed a game.
I saw that recently as well.
Yeah,
Irish captain, so not the captain.
She's now the vice captain, but she's moved to Lee. Right, yeah. So she, you know, and this is a success story, right? Because she enjoyed rugby league so much. She's from Ireland, where there's no rugby league, right? And she enjoyed rugby league so much. She was like, I'm going to go north. So she moves up to Manchester. She's playing for Lee Leopards now. We also had Kaz Colley, who played for England two years ago. She got a full England cap. So, you know, we've got two full bona fide internationals. We've got Chloe Alcorn this year, has made the Welsh training squad for the World Cup. So there's two full internationals already. There's one in the pipeline for another international. And sort of, you know, the men's section will always do all right. It'll always survive. But it was these areas of growth that just had to be recognised. And we sort of pushed all of our effort into the women's thing. That takes off. That does really well. And then it was like, right, let's revisit the wheelchair stuff. So we revisited that in last June, July. We put on a session. Again, we didn't know what the success rate was going to be. 17 people turn up. And we regularly get sort of, I don't know, 12 to 20 people turning up.
Amazing.
And you can do stuff with that. Like, you can play full-on games in training. You can divvy the teams up, 2-3 teams. You can have mini festivals in training every time. And we've got four guys who played in the World Cup who just happened to, I mean, they're not in Bedford, but they live close enough that they can drive to training and play for us.
Mad.
You know, within an hour's circumference of Bedford. So, yeah, so we're doing really well with the growth. I don't know if we've got lucky or if it's just right place, right time, or if we're putting something on that's good and attractive and people are coming in because they're attracted to the brand and how it's growing and, you know, and what we're doing. So
I was going to say right place, right time, but you've been doing this for nearly 20 years, right? So started off as just a bloke who wanted to play footy, you know, and that's all it was. But now you're seeing the women's, you're seeing the wheelchair, and you're obviously very popular, mate. I'm going to read some of the comments here. So Sean Gary Thimester, he said, I love you, Rob. We've got another comment from Anthony Hackman. Yes, Rob, whoop, our leader. You've got another comment from Sean Orton saying, miss the beginning. You'd better give a shout out to us at the Sheffield Eagles, Rob. So you're a popular guy, mate. So you're obviously doing something right. And you got a good following, man. Aaron Higgs said, I heard it's because people love Joshua Spearing. All right. So there's obviously some personal jokes here.
Yeah.
I mean, what started as you just wanted to play footy and, you know, trying to get things happening, the persistence has continued. So you've got, tell us what stages we're at. So the men's senior team is Southern Conference League, which is like a
Yeah,
Division Four, right?
tier four,
Where are
yeah.
the women at? Where are the wheelchair at? Like, what sort of level are they competing at, or who are they competing against
Right,
these other teams?
so the men are tier four, right? So as you know, the professional system in England for men is Super League, Championship, League One, and then there's a glass ceiling from tier four into the pro leagues. We're one of the founding clubs in the Southern Conference League, which is sort of it's evolved and it's sort of settled this year. We had eight teams last year. London Scholars came out of League One and into Southern Conference League this year, to make nine teams. So we've got a strange sort of loop fixture type scenario going on there. But that's a good comp. That's a strong comp. You got Hammersmith making round four of the Challenge Cup this year. West making round three of the Challenge Cup this year.
Yeah.
This is a good competition to play in. It's a real success for the sport. The women play in tier two, so that's the championship. So we play against Cardiff, London Broncos, and the Army. So three really tough sides. Cardiff are full of Welsh internationals.
Yep.
London Broncos obviously have the draw of being the London Broncos.
London, yeah.
And then the Army literally have an army to pick from. So, we've gone into the comp this year against those four. It's going to be tough. It's always tough, but it doesn't put people off. And then the wheelchair comp this year, they've sort of restructured how that looks. So you've got the Super League at the top, and then you've got I think there's three pools of championship. So North, South, and Southwest, or something like that, I think. Somebody will correct me in the comments, I'm sure. If Higgsy's still watching, he'll have a dig. We've got clubs at these at what I suppose is the highest tier we can be at this stage.
If the ladies win the championship, they play off against the Northern champs for a spot in the Super League, the Women's Super League, right? So that's how it's happening at the moment.
So, a guy called Tom Brindle has he structured this women's comp, and it's been a sort of a 2, 3, 4 year process. We've got Women's Super League. Let's see what we can do underneath that. So, a couple of competitions, and they were just ring fenced, and there was no real pro like th there was no route for progression. It was just this is the comp. It's standalone. Get it done. See how it works. If it's a successful, progress it next year. And they've now opened up the pyramid, so there is now a route clear through from our comp into Super League.
Yeah, mad.
It's a tough route because you've got to, if you win our comp, you then play the winners of the Championship North, and then if you win that, you play the bottom of Super League. So almost like the old middle eight type scenario.
Yeah.
So what you'll eventually get, and it's essentially one up, one down. So there's only one team could get promoted, only one team could get relegated if that's how it works with the repechage. But I think that the thing is, it's a slowly, right? We'll get to the right teams in the right comp over the next 2 or 3 years, based on on-field standard.
That's amazing. We've got some people in the comments. Let me just read. So, Shane Orton is saying for wheelchair, it's championship. The wheelchair championship is North, East, and North, West, and South. So, wheelchair has three championship pools, I suppose.
Yes.
Simon Garland is saying that there's North and South championship. So, that must be for the women. So, there's the North and the South. And then there's Midlands, which will be a development league for now. This is so great. I love that our listeners know what they're talking about. Sean again, the finals are top of each league, plus a playoff between second place, northwest slash east.
Yeah, so it's the same in the wheelchair. Yeah, Sean really knows what he's talking about
Yeah.
when it comes to wheelchair
Fantastic. No,
rugby. Yeah.
that's amazing. So you got so okay, it's all happening, man. How does this even, I mean, you're in a rugby union town. How does all this passion and love for rugby league, how does it even happen? Like, what are you doing that other people need to be doing? I don't even know if you can answer that.
I don't know. I mean, you've got to ask the boys who come down. You've got to ask. I just tried to do it so that I could play with people. If Sean's still watching, mate, get in touch. What made you come down? What made you stay? We'll give him 2-3 minutes to answer that question.
Sean,
He's
you
just
can.
had a newborn, so he's probably bouncing a kid around. Trying
Sean,
to
you
stop
can jump.
Crying.
You can jump on live with us if you really want to, mate. If you want to answer that question via video, more than happy to have you. But so you're just basically doing the things. You're basically doing the things that you want to see happen. Like you just want to keep playing. You want to give people opportunities. You want to make sure you're turning up every week. Is it about the community, the camaraderie? Like, there's got to be some secret sauce.
So when it started, right, the culture was unreal. It was a bunch of mates, all sort of similar age. You play rugby with each other. You go out. People obviously, like, as life goes on, people drop out, families, work, moving away, whatever it is. And then you've got to figure out a way of getting the new guys in. You've got to figure out a new way of inspiring people. But by that point, you know, I've got to the point where I don't want to go out every Friday, Saturday night because I can't.
Because you're old like me, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually older than you, Cub, so thanks, mate. but yeah, it's figuring out how to get those new guys in and what's attractive for them, what's appealing for them. You know, and some people it was a standard. So when the Southern Conference League started, it was, this is going to be a big jump from where we were playing into the Southern Conference Leagues. So it's like, right, if we're going to do this, we're probably going to need to attract in a slightly higher standard of player, because you can't really be the casual player anymore. Hey, Treacle, how are you, mate?
But I was, thanks.
Yeah, good, buddy, good. Yeah, so, you know, it's a lot of it's sort of taking a punt. So you go,
yeah.
If we build it, they'll come. And that's kind of always been my ethos. It's like, you know, more conservative people around me will sort of say, well, let's get the playing stuff and then do the jump. Whereas I'm like, oh, fuck it, let's just do it. If we do it, people will come. If they don't, then we'll fail and we'll just be back where we started from. So I guess that's it. I've just always reached for the stars and hope that people will follow and buy into it. And
the passion,
so far, so.
The passion showing, mate. Some of you boys are here watching us. So we've got Matt Spavins. He said, the boys and the passion of the club made me stick around, and the goals which people wanted to achieve. So Bradley Hirons. He said, Hirons, changing the mentality. That's the major step this year. The culture is slowly coming back this year. Saturday was a good trip. Not sure where you went, but I'm sure it was a great trip. And then we've got Sean on, but then Sean Orton's message and saying, wait, which Sean was he talking about? So I don't know if we got the right Sean.
Yes,
Sean, are you there, mate? What's going on?
Yeah,
if I'm not the right one, I can easily disappear.
Mate, what you like? I'm here asking Rob, what the fuck is he doing so right that he's just making rugby league grow in an area where rugby league doesn't traditionally exist? He hasn't got the answers, but hopefully yourself and some of the other boys do have the answers. What's happening right at Bedford Tigers, man?
To be honest, from I think I started playing in 2009. I came back from tour, and I didn't really have anything to do while I was on leave. And I was pointing out this rugby league club, and I even turned around and said, I think it was my stepdad that highlighted it, I'm not playing that northern crap, because I was a union boy through and through. But the first season getting to play, and it was the atmosphere with the lads. It was something different. It was something to do during the summer. And everyone was genuinely, I think everyone knew that they were doing a sport in an area where rugby league didn't exist. But it was such a good group of lads. And the benefit of having a lot of quite good rugby union teams around is we had the benefit of being able to not select or cherry pick, but a lot of very talented guys from a lot of very talented union clubs were coming to league and were applying their individual skills. And it gave Tigers a very, very good a foundation to grow upon. Certainly what I noticed when I first joined. Then when the East came along and the East competition got bigger, and like Demons came in, who were unbeaten in their season, and they came to us, we beat them. I think Northampton Demons were a really good team. We were the first team to beat them in years. And then as it grew and grew and grew, everyone just got on. And everyone can harp on about how, oh, it's the environment, or it was the camaraderie, or it was the leadership. It was that the same old stuff that everyone says. But Tigers, genuinely, it was, as Rob said, it was a group of guys that wanted to play rugby. But it was the fact that those guys were all got on, I mean, it was, it's cliche just to say we were like family. We've had our ups and downs. Players have had a go at players. There's been different decisions that have gone either way, but the fact of the matter is the family always stuck together. You wanted every summer to go out and play for Tigers. The winning, I'll be honest, the winning did help. We became one of the most difficult teams to beat in the East before the South existed. Yep. We had great competitions against great teams. But the other thing that's got to go in is the other teams in the league. Roosters, we had a great rivalry with and some great players play for them. And we had some great matches. St Albans were there as well. We saw Brentwood develop from a team that when they started weren't necessarily very good, but very, very young and very dedicated players that have now turned into a very formidable force in the South, in the league with our South team. It was just the atmosphere that was created with Tigers. We've always held ourselves as quite a respectful team, and a lot of teams respected playing us. And as much as it is to blow smoke up the boys' arse, a lot of that comes down to Rob, because behind the scenes with Rob, Graham Brown, those two in particular, and Sam Richbell for me would be the other massive mention. Without those guys doing the hard rugby work, this team wouldn't exist. And it's because of them that it's their leadership at that level was vital to the reason why we're so good. And then behind them, the likes of Brad and Brad and Matt were imperative. Without Spavs and Brad, this team, it wouldn't have that underneath of family. And I think that's what Spavs and Brad brought, that more than what a lot of people will ever give them credit for. And then underneath them, you had a group of guys that just wanted to play rugby. And if it wasn't for, like I said, Graham and Rob and Rich Bell at the top level in leadership, and then the likes of Brad and Spavins underneath them doing the social aspect, doing the media, being around the players, always chatting, that you need a cocktail of personalities. And we've had it for, as you said, Rob's been doing this for 20 years. This isn't a new fad. These guys have been doing such a good job for so long. It's because of them that the club has developed, and it's with them. Personally for me, I've loved playing for Tigers. I've travelled the length and breadth of the country, and I would do again if I could to play for Tigers. But it's because of them that this club's been a success, and it's down to those five in particular.
You guys have all been together for a long time, right? And I just wonder, you know, obviously there's juniors coming through, but what I mean, Rob, I know you've tried to retire, but you've ended up back on the field this year. You know, are there juniors coming through, or you just can't give it away? What's going on?
So the one thing that didn't really survive COVID was our attempt at junior pathways. We had a really good sort of local concept where we actually set up four clubs locally in and around Bedford, and they were all competing against each other. And the idea was that we got to sort of under 15s, under 16s, and then those four clubs would funnel into a 16s and an 18s at the Tigers, and COVID hit and just the wheels fell off that. So we're slowly starting to rebuild that. Look, we've got an under 16, so we're going to play some games this year, just to bring in that age group of player. And then hopefully in the next couple of years, they'll be able to play seniors, whether that's in the second team or if they're good enough in the first team, you know, depending where we are as a club at that point. Juniors is the pathway, and juniors is where we need to be picking players up and turn them into rugby league players before they hit seniors, because we need to at some point stop having such a reliance on rugby union players coming across. We've got a load of guys who sort of grew up with rugby union, now transition, will probably call themselves rugby league only, like Treacle would call himself rugby league only. There's probably a handful of four or five guys, maybe six or seven at a push, who would just not play rugby union, but that's not enough to be successfully sustainable at the level that we're at. We do have to look at other ways to strengthen that core of the squad.
I've got a bunch of questions. I'm going to keep bouncing between you. If anyone in the chat has questions as well, drop them in here. I'll try and catch them. Treacle, did you ever cop shit for playing rugby league or playing that Northern game from anyone other than your dad? Because I know all around the world, you know, people got banned from rugby union and things like that. Would you even care if that happened? Like, tell us your story.
No, I'm nowhere near good enough to have to sort of lose out on all that. But no, my dad's not the biggest fan of league. My sister's playing in my sister's in the now in the under-20 Scotland Union setup, and he goes to all our games up in Scotland at Stirling and at Glasgow Warriors. And he's come down and seen me play a couple of games, and he just doesn't quite get it. Which I agree, because I was the same. I was the one that said to my stepdad, I didn't want to go and play that union, sorry, that league crap, that northern thing. That's not what I do. I play union leagues, boring. And I've got to be honest, the first season I got in, I got my head taken off pretty much most games. I didn't understand the physicality. I didn't understand the tackle method. But then when I ended up getting posted, I had a season when I was at when I had the whole season at Tiger. And from a young winger's point of view, being on the wing in Union, if you're playing for a really good team, it's a lot of fun. If you're playing at academy level or junior or academy level or amateur level in Union, if you're playing in the middle of winter and it's freezing cold and you're not getting the ball, you're going to get bored very quickly. In league, you're involved in, at the very, very least, every other attacking set. And if you're annoying little shit like me, you'll try and be involved in every single attacking set. From a rugby league, genuinely, it's probably argue and say that it's league will make you a better rugby player, without a shadow of a doubt. You will, particularly transferring it to league to union, you will see gaps that you never saw before in union. You will see, you will see frailties in defence. You'll see frailties in your own defence, much more in union by playing league, because it very much is, it's relentless. It's never going to stop. And the big thing I'd say for young people that are particularly playing union or that want to get into league is, particularly if you're a winger or a back, is you've got the freedom to be able to make that mistake. If you're in union and you come up against some 7 foot gargantuan lad on the wing and you get hit by him, you're turned over, you're going to get turned inside out. Whereas if you play league, if you go for that gap and you don't quite make it, you put the ball back. And you'll learn very, very quickly, right, that gap wasn't there. I need to do this. Do I need to go around the outside? Do I need to sidestep? Do I need to work on my pace? League encourages you to take those chances. And because there was a comment somebody made about how getting those people to, as you like, copied my quote saying, getting those people to convert from that northern crap. It's the sense that league will give you so much more freedom. And the benefit with playing, putting it back to Bedford Tigers, is you were given that freedom at Tigers. You were encouraged to be a little bit different. You were encouraged to go for the gaps. No one ever stole your lunch money for doing anything wrong. But for anyone playing union in the summer, it's near freezing. You have a nice cold beer at the end of it, and you play your mates. It's a lot. It gives you something to do in the summer, even to try it. And you'll soon find that, particularly from an attacking point of view, from a backs, league is so much better than union. And I'll probably cop crap for that, but without question, I would never. I'd go back to union because it's fun, it's a bit of a laugh, but league is where it's going, and particularly in the area with what Rob and the other guys have mentioned have done. Bedford Tigers have gone from a team that was almost destroyed a couple of years back to a team that now has, a wheelchair team, which is something that's coming up and going. And two teams, you've got the East team, which have done very, very well since the East team started. A South team competing against teams that are able to mix it with, round three and four in the Challenge Cup. We've got a women's team that have already made two full-time internationals. We've had a number of other lassies have made the England, like the Lionhearts, or their A squad, and that's just from us alone. So the Tigers has grown exponentially, and as I said, it comes down to a lot of the hard work that Rob's done, Graham Brown's done, Rich Bell, Spavins, Brad, and a load of others. I'm just thankful that they I'm just thankful they put up with my annoyance and constantly being injured and allowed me to play for them since 2009.
I mean,
So I've got to be thankful for that.
you're a good ad for the sport. Alex Chandler has a solution for your dad as well. He's my mate from Scotland. He says, "We'll dual red you with Glasgow Rugby League if you want. Maybe your dad will see the light." So maybe that's a little solution for you.
I'll look at, if I go up north during the summer, I'll see what I can do.
But how are you guys? So look, and this isn't just a Bedford problem. This is probably a rugby league in the south problem, but there's always going to be this sort of comparison to rugby union, or there's always going to be this stigma that it's the northern game. How is our sport meant to fight that stigma? Is it worth fighting? Is there anything we can do?
Yeah, so like when I started this, it was that's not real rugby, that's the northern game. I've just ignored all that because the longer you keep that stereotype alive, the longer it will be around, right? So it's just this is Bedford Tigers, this is rugby league, this is what we're doing, this is the sport we're playing, and there's a national side that you can support, and there's teams all over the place. You look at a map of England and where the teams are. It's not like there's a red sort of loads of red dots across the M62, right? Those red dots spread up to Scotland. They spread all the way down to the southeast, all the way out to Cornwall in the southwest, over in Ireland, in Wales, right? We've got to stop calling it the Northern Game. Yes, it started in the north and across the M62, and that's the heritage, and that's really important, right? We've got to keep that. We've got to keep that importance with the history of the game, but that's the history of the game, right? The future of the game is that it is spreading. There are clubs everywhere, and those clubs are getting stronger. The pockets of rugby league outside the M62 are getting stronger.
I
I
think
agree, man.
to add into that, as I said, it needs to be stopped looking at it as as like a northern sport. It needs to be looked at as it's rugby. Now it's two different, it's two very, very different codes, and there's there are massive differences. But the ball's the same size, it's the same shape. You've only got two less players playing league, and you're still going forward. You've still got to pass it back. You still kick a ball. You still smash seven bells out of people. To be brutally honest with you, rugby is rugby. You can enjoy massively enjoy both of them, and you both said the same thing. It's not a case of, I mean, as I did, I looked at it as a case of it's what northern people play. No, it's brilliant. It's easily for me personally, I much prefer to play rugby league because you're more involved. But I said it's just rugby. So rugby will make you better at rugby, whether you play union to you do a bit of union to then focus on league in the summer, or whether you do a bit of league in the summer just to keep you warm, your hands on the ball to go back to your main, your main love, which will be union in the winter months. It's rugby, and the best thing about rugby is that everyone loves it. It's inclusive as everything. Everyone, there is a position for everyone in rugby. It's just a case of get involved. And Rob said, don't fight it, just come play rugby. It's
Love it, man.
brilliant, to be perfectly honest.
I love it, man. Rob, I want to take you back a little bit to we mentioned the juniors because I know you want to retire from the field soon, mate. So we've got to get
I'll
these.
tell you what, I'll leave. I've sort of jumped in. I apologize, Rob, for
Love
stealing
you,
since I've
man.
stolen
No,
your time.
awesome. Nice. Hey, nice to meet you, brother.
I'll
Thanks for
disappear.
joining in.
No, not a problem. How do I do this?
See that, very cool.
So, mate.
Right, Treacle is gone. Good to see you, mate. Mate, he's a
But
great
it's a bit,
advertisement for your
man, but
club.
you put 20p in treacle and he just doesn't stop talking.
All good, man.
Nah,
All good. Back to
London's a
the
bit.
back
London's
to
a
the
bit.
Rob back to the Rob and Carbs show.
Yes.
Mate, let's talk juniors because you said you're trying to get juniors starting again. So before COVID, four clubs, 16s, 18s, moving into the senior side, trying to build that up again. How does that work? Who runs that? Like how administratively, how does that come together? What do you need to do?
Right, so I've got this ethos around volunteers where you can't make somebody do something that they don't want to do. So, you generally you can get people interested in I want to volunteer, and you can give them a job and they won't do it, and then I've got to pick up the slack and do the job anyway. So it's almost like you got to say, look, we want to run a junior side. Is there anybody out there who's motivated to do it? And then somebody will put their hand up because they want their kid to play rugby. They want their kid to progress. They see what we're doing. They see where we're going. They're excited by that. They want to push that. And then you get that parent come to you and say, look, I want to do this. This is the qualifications I've got. What else do I need? As soon as you can hear motivation in their voice, jump on that. Harness that, nurture that, guide that, give them a level of importance within that realm of the club. Let them build it. Like, don't micromanage. Manage it, help them out and support them with anything they want to, that they need. But micromanaging it, I may as well do it myself. Just trust in the fact that you've got people there who can do the job. If you get a good feeling about somebody, let them run with it. And just monitor that and how they're doing it and how they're growing it.
I love that answer, man. It's incredible. There must have been also, obviously you mentioned this is all volunteer sort of stuff. Like you said at the start, your aspirations are, to be working in professional rugby league somehow, some way. And I have no doubt that you'll get there just because of the passion that you have. And I've known you for a couple of years now from the podcast. You always got ideas and there's always something going on. But were there times for you, and in particular, I think during COVID, during lockdown, were there times for you where you were like, fuck this, I can't do it anymore, I give up?
Yeah, there's been a few. There's been a few because there's only, I can sit here and I can pour passion and energy and time and effort into stuff. And if you're not getting the feedback, I've always said, right, I never do anything for thanks. I never do anything for thanks. I just do it because I believe in it and I want to see it happen. I want to see it grow. I want to see people enjoy themselves. And I think that. So we had one of the, I don't know if she'll kill me or not, or if she'll even hear this, but one of the wives with the guys at the wheelchair, right? So I set this team up, and the weirdest thing is, I've now got people who have had legs amputated are playing rugby league for the same club that I play for, and they call Bedford Tigers their club. They're proud to represent the Tigers, wear the same badge that the men wear, that the women wear. Anyway, we got this training game going on, and I'm sitting up and I'm sort of watching on, and this Trev's wife came up, sat next to me, and said, I haven't seen Trev smile since he had the operation. I was like, fucking hell. Like, that was massive. That was like, that was, for all the shit and all the times when you sit there and you go, oh, fucking hell, is this worth it? Is it worth pouring all this time and all this effort and all this energy into this? And then you hear a comment like that, and you realize that what's happening is people's lives are being changed by this. People have found something that they love. They've found something that they're becoming passionate about. They've found something that's a new motivation for them in their life. So yeah, there's been dark times, and there's been times where it's like, this is too much hard work and I don't have enough help and whatever. And then you get something like that, and it's just, those are the little moments that just go, yeah, fuck it. All that shit's irrelevant. This is the right thing to be doing. So.
It's fucking amazing, man. If anyone out there is listening and wants to help out in some way, please reach out and do so. Even reach
Oh,
out to
yeah,
me and
please.
I'll put you through to Rob.
Please, please.
Johnny Hindley has a question in the chat, which is kind of where I want to end up. This is a question that I wanted to end with. So Johnny's reading my mind, but you guys are growing. You're talking about senior men's, you're talking about juniors, you're talking about women's, you're talking about wheelchair. There aren't many more places you can grow out, but there are places you can grow up, right? And I know that the League One in particular has called for, has called for a new club, or has called for people to, or for clubs to apply for the League One. Is this something that you might be interested, or are Bedford Tigers ready for something like that potentially?
I mean, yes is the long and short answer, right? So about 4 or 5 years ago, pre-COVID, it was, I sat down with some of the guys that Treacle mentioned just there, and it was, what's our 5-year plan? Are we just going to tick over year on year, or are we going to try and aim for something? And it was like, well, look, I think the ultimate goal is, if we're going to be putting this energy in, we've got to be growing somewhere. Nobody starts a business just to sit stagnant. They want to grow it, right? So it was always, let's have half an eye on League One, and that might be pie in the sky, but let's see what we can do. So I guess half of the stuff that I've been doing with the women's in a wheelchair is modeling myself on, or modeling the club on the pro clubs, on the Super League clubs, on the Championship clubs. And then they put this thing out a couple of weeks back saying, we're looking at bringing a new club in to make a 36th franchise. So that gives them three tiers of 12, doesn't it? And yeah, I'd be lying if I said we weren't going to look at it, but I'm also very conscious of the fact that we need to spend a lot of time doing some due diligence on whether that is the right move for the club. Because it's going to come with financial implications. It's going to come with, we're going to need to, we can't look like we currently look in a professional environment. It's got to be, we currently operate as grassroots, right? We're operating as an amateur club. And yes, we've got these teams in tier two with the wheelchair and the women's, and they're competitive. massive, and we've got the guys who are sort of playing at international level. But on the men's stage, we are still at where we're at. We're relying on rugby union, we're relying on grassroots, and we are most people's second choice of activity. So we would need to look at that. We'd need to look at where our level of expertise are. You know, do we have the coaching standards? Do we have the backroom standards? Do we have all that? If we were going to do it, we'd have to bring the right people in. So I guess, yeah, if this, if the podcast here's got a reach and there's people locally or even not locally or happy to work remotely, you know, get in touch. And if you feel like you've got something to add value or bring to the club, or you think you can help, then I'm up for having a conversation with anybody at any time, whether in the UK or Australia or America or, you know, wherever the interest is. Because it is something that we're going to look at. It's something that we're going to weigh up and we're going to measure. But we're also going to look at teams from Oxford, Hemel, Wales, the All Golds over in Bristol, Gloucester way, Coventry Bears. I mean, Coventry Bears, you know, still exist, but as the Midlands Hurricanes, we've got to look at the track record of expansion clubs not succeeding. And why have they not succeeded? And what do we think that we're going to do that's different without being arrogant about the situation, you know? So, yes, we would like to do it, but it'd have to be a very cautious approach, and we'd have to do it for the right reasons, not just an ego trip.
It sounds like you put a lot of thought into it, which is great. What, how long have you got to, what would the application process be? Like, how long until they make a decision?
So they haven't released the applications yet. I'm not even sure that they know what the criteria are. I think they're sort of finalizing what that looks like. Once they've got that, we'll obviously peruse through that and see if it fits, see if it's going to work. We feel like geographically we're a good location, right? So we're just outside London. We're 40 minutes from London. So any Aussies who want to come and play for us and live in a slightly cheaper place that's not London, but close to London, like tap us up, look us up on the socials, get in touch. That's a serious thing, by the way. We, you know, we'd look for hosting, accommodation, and finding jobs for people. Where was I going with that? I've lost my train of thought.
How long have we got to put this club together, mate? This
So yeah,
semi-pro club.
the process hasn't been released yet. Once it's been released, they're talking about 25, 26.
Okay.
So I don't know if ideally they want somebody in for next year or if it's going to be a 2 year process. For me personally, I think next year would probably be, I mean, I'd give it a go if it was the only thing we had, you know, if it was the only way we were going to get it and we wanted to do it. But I think that's too short. I think we need a year's running. The Dolphins weren't told, are you starting in the NRL in 2 months' time? You know, they were given that time to build everything behind the scenes, get the infrastructure, get the finances, get the investment, get the squad together, and then, you know, give it a good shot and a crack. So yeah, it's either 25 or 26. Basically, by 2026, they want three tiers of 12 teams.
Where does the money come from for something like that? Is it something the community can get behind, or will you
Yeah,
need
so
investment?
yeah, so this is it, and this is something else we need to look at seriously. Is the central funding for League One is awful. You know, I think there was a time where it was circa 75K. It was probably 100K, then it dropped to 75K, and now again, if there's somebody out there who knows exactly, then they can correct us in the comments. But I think it's around about 15,000, which probably doesn't. No, that's not going to stretch. So you need, we would need to look at how we can make it commercially and financially stable and sustainable and viable. And that would have to come from, you know, we'd have to branch out memberships, sponsorships. How do we attract that money in? Is that having a shop that brings in a few quid here or there? It's just loads of different avenues to rake some money in here or there. Is it that we just go out and we find a big investor somewhere? It's working with the right people. Yeah, there's a pretty big network, but then there's also like there's networks beyond our network. So you're in my network, but then you've got your own
Yeah,
network. So it's
fair
like,
enough. Yeah.
can I tap into your network through you? Is it something that inspires you? Are you going, fucking hell, I could have a bit of a bit of a partnership with a League One club over in England, or a pro club over in England. And Chasing Kangaroos reaches out to its network and brings in, because there's going to be somebody somewhere who's like, that sounds really cool. I want to be a part of that. And I got a bit of cash, and it's, I'll have a train set in England. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, we're going to have a lot of serious conversations. And while the pie in the sky, or the romantic vision is, yes, we would love to be a pro club, and we'd love to be the next pro club. We sit just north of London, like I said. We're on the M1, which goes right up the middle of England. We're on the Midland Main Line, which runs right up the middle of England, connects us with the M62. So, that's how sports spread in the first place, wasn't it? It was towns that were linked by railroads. So it's no different. We're on that main drag through England. So, yeah, we got it. I think we're geographically really well placed. It's how we take that next step. Where those conversations are going to happen? Who those conversations are going to happen with to bring the money in, or to bring in the commercialization or the sustainability or whatever it is.
Mate, I'd invest, but you'd have to rebrand to the Dragons. It'd have to be the Bedford Dragons. It just couldn't be the Tigers, you know what I mean? But
We've had
no,
this conversation,
man.
haven't we?
But man, I'm sure. Look, that's the thing, right? You have these conversations out loud. You don't know who's listening. We've got people from all over the place listening to this podcast. There's plenty of people on here live. There'll be plenty of people listening to this later. So if anyone's out there that can help, please do. And man, it sounds like you're at the start of a very long journey. I mean, you've been going for 20 years with this club almost, but it seems like it's just beginning. And it's really funny, like you've been playing all this time and you're still playing, you're still strapping on the boots every now and then. But I have a feeling your administrative career is really going to be fucking mad. And I actually hope that, in the next maybe 6 to 12 months, we'll have a chat again and we'll see where you're at. If
Yeah, let's do it.
if this League One journey is progressing and moving forward. I think the best place to end this conversation is a message we've just had in the chat from Hannah. She says, don't forget the amazing wives who organize fun days. So shout out to all the wives or the wags. Couldn't do it without the ladies, that's for
Yeah,
sure.
thanks, Hannah. She's Treacle's wife,
There you
so
go.
she's long suffering, right?
Mate, Hannah, he's a good talker, Treacle. We know that for sure. So he's no, it was great to have him on. Good to see the passion.
Yeah, it
But
was. Yeah.
Rob, amazing man. I love having this chat. And I guess the big message overall is I really wanted to try and find the secret sauce. Like, how does someone keep a club going for so long and build rugby league in a place where, rugby league has no right to be built, right? And I think it's the passion, it's the fucking support from everyone around them. And it's just the motivation to keep going. So fantastic. Anthony Hackman says Asheville sponsorship incoming. I don't know what that means, but reach out to Rob if you
Yeah,
haven't
nice
already.
one.
But Rob, man, as always, thanks for chasing kangaroos with me. And I'll see you next time, man. Hopefully we'll have more to talk about in 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, for sure, man. Cheers, Cubs.
Cheers, brother. Bye.